I'm Ernst Zündel with another program for the Voice of Freedom. And this time we are broadcasting from California, and we are with a lady from Brazil named Celina Mez Rebassa. And you were born in Santa Catarina?
Yes.
That's quite a famous place in Brazil because it's basically known as a German town, German region.
It's a German state, really.
An estate?
Yes.
Explain to us what you mean by that. Did the Germans have such big estates that they turned into whole states?
No, it was exactly the opposite. It's like a province in Canada. Mm-hmm. Santa Catarina is a state. And in 1830, the Germans came to Brazil as immigrants. And of course, they were promised the help of the government and so on. They never did come. So they brought their own engineers, their own professors, their own doctors, their own lawyers, their own laborers and foremen and so on. So they decided to start their own town, and that's what they did. They came to the Vale do Itajaí, that from the sea they just went up the river, and they formed the cities. So Joinville, Itajaí, Brusque, Blumenau, they are all German towns, and they are very industrial. They are the part that is produced the main wealth of Santa Catarina. And of course, all these cities, they spoke German, because since the teachers were German and the government never did anything for them, never even opened a road, they did all by themselves. So before the war was really a German enclave.
So, does that mean that you were educated in German?
Oh, no, not I. My father was an elementary school teacher, and my mother was the post office and telegraph operator in a small town. And we went to school in Portuguese. So my education was in Portuguese. And in our place, there were three roads. One side was all German. And the other road was all Italian, and the other road was all Polish. And Sunday was very interested because all these three roads, they all came to the village for the mass. And everybody came to the post office that my mother kept it open out of good-heartedness, so the people didn't have to make another trip to come to the post office. And we were always hearing Polish, German, and Italian all the time, every Sunday.
And you mean you met in the same church for the same mass?
Or? Oh, everybody was Catholic. The Germans and yes, and the Protestant, in fact, they have a small church over there. Mm-hmm. But the minister always came once a year or twice, or when there was a wedding, because there were a few Germans that were Protestant. But for us, the children was very interested because he would come with his wife. So we all run to the street to see the wagon to come with the priest and his wife. It was the most interesting thing, and all the children, you know.
Yeah, yeah. Priest with a wife.
Uh-huh. Yeah, oh, it was an incredible thing. Uh-huh. We always run to the street.
But I suppose because the masses would be in Latin then?
Oh, yes, they were in Latin.
Nobody could understand it, so that was okay, right?
Oh, sure, it was okay, but all the hymns and so on
Oh, I
was
see.
sung in Portuguese, except when it was the solemn mass and so on, so they were sung in Latin.
I see.
And my father was the that was the organ operator and the head of the choir. It was not even an organ; was harmonium. You know, the small little thing. So
scaled down version. Yeah.
Oh yes, very much so.
Now, how about German language teaching, cultural institutions? Did you go to any German schools at all, or did neighbors go to German schools?
Yes, but this was in the city. You see, we were about 36 kilometers from Blumenau and 46 from Itajaí. Now, in Blumenau, everything was German. There was no Portuguese spoken there. But in those days, the transportation was so difficult that it might very well be São Paulo. You see, today you have a car and in less than an hour you are in Blumenau in Itajaí. In those days were different. There was bus line only from Luiz Alves to Itajaí, and 46 kilometers, it took 3 hours for the bus to make that because the roads were not paved and was very slow, and when it rained sometimes it stuck down and has to be taken.
Now, when the Second World War came, how were the people in Blumenau that were only speaking Germans? How were they affected by this ban on German or by the persecution of Germans?
It was terrible because in this city, if you didn't speak German, you couldn't buy a spool of thread or food or anything at all because there was no Portuguese spoken there at all. Even the very few rare black people that live in Blumenau, they spoke German. And so when the war came, German and Italian was totally forbidden, totally forbidden. And there was incredible hardship on these people. Another thing is that no more than 5 Germans could congregate. So I have a friend that married at that time, and she couldn't take the picture with both parents because there would be 6 German, and they could only have 5. So they took a picture of the bride and groom and his parents, and then another separate picture, the bride and groom and their her parents, because wasn't allowable. And the government was very, very afraid of espionage and you know, people that will take German side and so on. What never happened? They never got a single German that was commit treason or that spy for Germany and so on.
Now, how about people in the army? There must be German men that went off to the army.
Yes, but you see, by that time they have to speak Portuguese. And I have no idea if they were excluded or not, but I don't think so. I don't think so.
But and then how about church services or schools? Did the kids then suddenly from one night to the next have to go to Portuguese schools?
No, because there was no Portuguese teacher or anything in those towns like Blumenau, Joinville, Gaspar, and so on. You see, in our town, we always read in Portuguese because we were not, like I said, we were Italian, Polish, and German, but everybody spoke Portuguese.
So were these people then living a crime, doing things illegally by teaching their kids in German, or what?
Well, what happened is that the government was confronting with the situation that now they had to deal with. So you see, during the time of the war was terrible because they have soldiers and functionaries and everything. Suddenly, the Brazilian government appeared in this town, what was not there before. I mean, we always have bureaucrats and so on, but all the business was conducted in German. And after the war, they decided to take very good care of it. So today, Santa Catarina is the most literate state that has more schools. So they open one school every 6 kilometers. There is a school. So no child has to go more than 3 kilometers to the school.
So that they can indoctrinate them in Portuguese or what?
Yes. So, you know, they learn Portuguese. And today, the towns are very much mixed, so there is a migration from the north, and then, of course, the government start take open roads and putting schools, especially schools and so on. So today is different, but still, if you want to get a good job in Joinville or Blumenau, you better speak German. because there is, I'm sorry, no? because there is a tremendous commerce with Germany, again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. How about businesses? I was told that the Condor Airlines, for instance, was a German airline in Latin America.
Yes.
And that shipping lines and so on were in German hands. What happened to that property during the Second World War?
A lot of property was expropriated, like Condor, that was German, and it was in Rio Grande do Sul, that was the next step close to the state close to Argentina. That was expropriated, and I understand companies like Bayer that made aspirin and medicines and so on was expropriated. They were in São Paulo, they were not in Santa Catarina. But in Santa Catarina, if they expropriate during the war, they gave it back after, because if the government was expropriate everything, who was going to deal with it?
Mm-hmm.
But it was a tremendous hardship.
No compensation for properties taken? Or
no.
Just restoration after the war?
If they gave you back, yes. If you are lucky and you gave back, no compensation.
Now, do you know the historical aspect? Why Brazil, that was so friendly and had such friendly relations with Germany, why would Brazil suddenly become so anti-German to this extent?
Brazil never became anti-German, really. Never became anti-Germans. The Germans have a tremendous admiration from Brazilians. What happened is that the United States needed a base to fly the planes from Latin America to Africa. And the shortest point between Dakar, Senegal, and America is the northern part of Brazil. So they need a naval base, not a base, an aerial base, in Natal, that is the furthermost point in Brazil. And Brazil, being neutral, did not agree with it. So the Americans sunk one ship, Brazilian ship, and more than 300 cadets went down. And they blame the German submarine. This is all history that has been told, so I'm not saying anything new. But we have a president at that time that was a dictator, that was Getúlio Vargas. And being a dictator, he has great sympathy toward fascism. And in fact, there was a budding fascism organization in Brazil at the time that was called Partido de Representação Popular com Plínio Salgado, that was persecuted and closed and so on. And so the Americans have to sink another ship to create commotion, but still Brazil resisted to get into the war. So what they did was through the Italian embassy. They got stationary through the cleaning woman, and they wrote very insulting letters against the president, calling him all types of things, including monkey. That was
big insult in Brazil.
Big insult to call him a monkey, you know, but anyhow. And so they create an incident when the Italian courier came, and he was going to the embassy that was in Rio at that time. Everything was in Rio. They create a car accident, and they change the bag, the mm-hmm. attaché case. And then, of course, they publish that letter that the Italian ambassador wrote to insult in Brazil and so on and so on. And, of course, they have their pay agents on the street, so there was big demonstrations that Brazil cannot swallow this insult, and we have to go against the fascists and so on. And they have to be very careful because our president was a fascist too. So, you mm-hmm. know, maybe that was one of the reasons. So finally, through inducements of the United States and through these demonstrations and so on, Brazil entered the war in 1944.
And so actually the period then was fairly short that the Germans had to live under this,
Yes, it was short because it was from 44 and the Brazilians were under American command and they fought in Italy, in Monte Cassino and Anzio, mostly. But they were really nothing but cannon fodder because the preparation of Brazil was minimal and of course Brazil had to rush to the war.
Mm-hmm. Now, when the war ended, how did it affect the Germans in Brazil?
Well, I was in boarding school in a German school at that time, but of course at that time we were all in Portuguese, and it was terrible because Blumenau was a German city, and of course the Germans were devastated that they lost, and I remember that I think it was about midnight or 1 o'clock in Brazil time when the news came, so all the bells on the city start
tolling,
and you know, the nuns that were all Germans, they were in a terrible scene. You could see on their faces that, you know, they didn't know what was going to happen to them. And I don't think anything happened except that nobody wanted to speak German, nobody wanted to show their Germanness out, because they didn't know what the consequences could be. They were, you know, so persecuting during the time, they were so spied upon that they were afraid. And then, of course, all the Germans' atrocities and the concentration camps and the Nazis and this and that came. And so nobody wanted to do it. And I remember my parents, they were both public officials, no German was spoken in the house during the war because we have spies that went around. And my father has a big radio at the time and he used to listen to the news. And once Brazil entered the war, he couldn't do that anymore. He could no longer listen to the German news. He could continue to listen to Brazilian news and so on. And so my parents never spoke German anymore in the house, and took quite a few years because a lot of people that came there, and my father was a tailor in the afternoon after he was a teacher in the morning, and people will come into the tailor shop and they just whispered German. They didn't want, you know, to talk like they used before and so on.
What a horrible situation, eh?
Yes. Mm-hmm. And the only people that didn't know Portuguese at all will speak German.
Mm-hmm. So this is why they quickly then became integrated into Brazil. What for 100 years they couldn't achieve, they achieved in what, less than 10 years?
Well, it's not that they integrate, you know. The question is that those cities were very industrial. And then when the government opened the transportation system, more people went to Blumenau and Joinville and Brusque and so on in search of jobs. And then, of course, the schools now were in Portuguese, so a lot of people went into boarding school like I did. And anybody that live outside will put the children in boarding school for them to be educated. Mm-hmm. And so little by little they were integrated, but like I said, today is 50 years after the war, and if you want a good job in these cities, you better speak German.
How many millions or how many thousands of Germans live in Brazil?
Oh, Brazil has a great population of Germans. You know, in Santa Catarina, in Rio Grande do Sul, is very pronounced, but in São Paulo, that's a big state, there is a lot of Germans there too.
Are we talking millions?
Probably. Probably.
Are they a political factor in Brazil?
No. Brazil has no race with the political clout because it's a country that integrated very, very much. Now they are starting, the politicians start imitating the Americans, and then they start to cater to little groups and created these little groups that in Brazil never had, including with the blacks we never had. I think Brazil is a country that has more mulattoes than anybody else. And if you go to Bahia and the northern part of Brazil, nobody there is really white or black. Everybody is mulatto. There is a lot of blacks there. But we never had racial problems in Brazil.
Now, how about the Jewish community? They always seem to stick together like birds. Are they not a political force?
The Jews in Brazil, yes, they are a very political force because they control most of the media. Not as totally as here, but they control the television stations and so on. But the strange thing is that they have names that are not Jewish. For instance, the Associadas, that was a bigger chain that doesn't exist anymore, his name was Assis Chateaubriand, you know, and he was Jewish. And we have another fellow that people only discovered that he was Jewish when he wanted to be president last election. And then, his political enemies or whatever showed that his real name was not Silvio Santos at all. His name was a Jewish name, and he was Jewish. And then we have the
Let me ask you then, that the fact that he had changed his name was held against him?
I don't know, because I wasn't there
he was not elected.
Well, no, he was not elected, and he has no chance of being elected at all, so he is not even trying this time. But what I mean is that they are not openly. For instance, the biggest magazine empire in Brazil is called Civita, their Italian name, and nobody knew until recently that they are Italian Jews.
So now, how about Kubitschek?
Kubitschek, yes, he was Jewish. And he invited Golda Meir to come to Brazil, and he gave a tremendous contribution to Israel at the time and so on. But you see, the Jewishness is never played there. And the Jews are much more discreet, and I don't think they have the influence on the government like they have here. But then they don't have to, because the Brazilian government, what is it?
You don't seem to have a very high opinion of Brazilian state functionaries.
Well, if you were more or less aware of the latest Brazilian politics, you see the president that was elected with so much hope and so on, he was impeached for robbing the country in such a scandalous way that they couldn't close the eyes anymore. Mm-hmm. And then the vice president that was totally banned from Brasilia has to be called back, and I don't think the poor fellow knows what hit him until today. So now we are going to have new elections in November. Let us see what that's going to
bring. Our time is running out. I just want to ask you some personal questions. How come you ended up in the United States?
Oh, I am exiled by marriage. Oh,
I see. It's not that you did something political down there that you had.
Well, I stayed 10 years without being able to get into the country. You see, we left Brazil a month before the golpe of 64, and was my salvation, because if I have been there, I probably have disappeared like so many hundreds of people did. Mm-hmm. And it was a tremendous persecution, and it was a very brutal dictatorship, and Brazil was terrible.
But your husband was American?
Yes.
And so you came to, Florida at the time? Or?
Yes, I came. When I married him, was the condition that we live in Brazil. So he took the residency, and we lived there for 6 months, but he couldn't conduct the business staying there. So being the hind leg of the elephant, I have to follow. And I came over, and I hate New York. I thought it was such a horrible city. And then was winter, and it was so depressive never to see the sun, you know, for the whole week, and everything was so gray, so terrible, that I told him, I said, I don't stay here, and with all that cold. So he said, well, we have land in Florida. It's much warmer there. And if we like, we build and stay there. If we don't like it, we can always find another place. So I went to Florida, and it was the 14th of July, and it was 96 degrees with all that humidity, and I was pregnant, and it was horrible. And he just looked at me, and he said, it's hot enough for you.
Now, let me ask you a political question. You are here at a highly charged political convention of historical revisionists. What sparked your interest in history? Did you always have it, or is it something recent?
I graduate with perfect 10 in history all my years before I entered university. But what got me into this was, first of all, common sense. Because Germany fought 5 years against the whole world, practically, even against Brazil. Look at that. And I thought, how on earth are they going to put their interests first in killing the Jews instead of defending themselves and, you know, attacking their enemies? Doesn't make any sense. And Hitler could not have all that success that he did and withstand for 5 years if he was so crazy or so paranoid with the question. And that was the first one. And then I said, and the railroads and everything was so bombed at the time. And he was going to have the railroad to transport Jews instead of food and troops and whatever else he needed. You know, and second, when I saw what the result of that story was, you know, look what happened to the Palestinians, and who is gaining so much. And without the story, this whole empire and the $6 billion a year that we are sending there couldn't exist, couldn't be. So I start looking into it, and I decided that was totally impossible, and I'm very glad I discovered that was.
Our time is rapidly winding down. When did you first actually discount gas chambers as such? When did that come?
I never believed in the gas chamber.
No?
To start with, because
gee,
I thought...
you are really skeptical.
Well, right? No, it's not skeptical, but I thought, look, the Germans are not stupid people. Why are they going to create this monumental problem of disposing of corpses when they are bringing what, according to the story, from Holland, from France and so on, a 2 cents bullet on the neck in a hole right there where they were was so much simple and easy and cheaper. So why to get all the railroad clogged up with these passengers to go and kill in a place that they couldn't even dispose of it? I thought it was stupid, and I knew the Germans weren't stupid, because then I had to make myself stupid because I'm German. So I never believed on that. I always thought it was something
so
crazy.
By simple deduction and common sense, you arrived at the solution to a very complex problem.
You see, that it took you so long to discover.
I was going to say,
I just got
see,
it by
it must
common
have been
sense.
Coupled with a woman's intuition. Listen, I thank you very much for the interview. Terrific.
You
Thanks
are
for coming on.
You are very welcome. Thank you.